This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 13th, episode 1676. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
That's right, it is Mary Kitzmiller Day here on Horses in the Morning. Mary stops by here the second Thursday of every month, and we appreciate that. It's been a long time now you've been doing this.
I know. It's been over a year, right? For sure.
I think
over
it's
a year.
Been 2 years.
Oh my goodness. Time flies.
I know. That's because you love hanging out with me so much.
I know.
That's what it is.
Yes.
Mary, you have some exciting things going on, and we're going to talk about those because since we talked to you last, you added to your collection. So we're going to talk about that and exactly what you're up to there. And then you have some cool guests planned for today. Jennifer, tell us about it.
Coming up on today's training, Horse Training with Mary Kitzmiller episode, brought to you by Horseware, John Langmore provides a preview of the cowboy movie, and that is his new documentary about the modern cowboy and the challenges therein. And then next up, Kitty Laumann explains using a pole in the gentling process and filling in the steady bounced strides in between. We've got more Mustang talk and listener training questions. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
You know, as much as we talk about Mustangs on this show, it could be the Mustang radio show because we seem to talk about them a lot.
It's like the Mustang Network. I think we have a few very, very, very big time Mustang enthusiasts, and they're hard not to talk about. They're so cool.
That is true. And we had a listener on yesterday who got her first Mustang, and she's the one that we had on that bought the Mustang already trained, and from a trainer, and absolutely loves it. And it was just so cool to hear her talk about her new baby. Well, I have,
oh yeah, and. Oh, sorry.
You know who I'm talking about, too, I think, because you saw the posts. Really cute Mustang.
And the trainer is actually a friend of mine. And I tell you what, there's two brothers, Zeke Zacharias and Sid Zacharias. And I've had one of them on. I get them very mixed up, so I don't remember which one. But they are some phenomenal young trainers. I've ridden with them a couple of times. We've both ridden with a great reining trainer who's also been on the show, Craig Johnson. And these kids picked up a lot from him. And I tell you what, if you guys are looking for something super quiet and knows a lot of stuff, check out Zacharias Horsemanship. And it wasn't meant to be a commercial for them, but they just do such a good job. I couldn't help myself.
Well, they obviously did a good job with this one, that's for sure. We one announcement here. One piece of housekeeping before we go on with the show and start talking training and what Mary's up to with her new ones is that we've been talking about the cruise that's coming up. A couple of things on that. One is Monday's episode of Horses in the Morning. The first part of it will be dedicated. We're going to have the travel agent on to give us all the details. Also, we're hopefully going to be talking to the people that run the trail ride on the island of Nassau. So we're going to hopefully be talking to them as well. One of the side trips you can take while on the cruise. Tonight for the auditors, the auditors get first shot at this. Tonight for the auditors in the auditor Facebook room at 8 o'clock, our designated HRN cruise director, legacy listener Rhonda, is going to be joining me on Facebook Live, and we're going to be talking about the cruise, and we're also going to be doing trivia with the next batch of test products to go out from horselovers.com. So if you haven't gotten a test product yet and you're an auditor, then you want to make sure that you join us tonight at 8 o'clock and answer a trivia question and get a test product sent out to you. If you're not an auditor yet and you've been thinking about it, today's a good day to do it. Sign up today. Go to horsesinthemorning.com or horseradionetwork.com. You'll see the auditor banner for as little as $1 a month. You can play with the other auditors and also be eligible for the test products. And make sure if you do that today to find the HRN auditor page on Facebook. Just search for HRN auditors and ask to join, and we'll add you in before tonight at 8 o'clock. So I wanted to make sure everybody knew about that. All right. Now, you were posting, and I didn't even know this because you obviously are holding out on me. I didn't know that you were going to do another Mustang makeover.
I didn't know either till pretty close to the wire. So I signed up just to have the option available and you know, got in. And this year they're doing something very different, very unique. It's called Player's Choice. And so in the past, like for the Mustang Million and the Supreme Mustang Makeover, and those took place like 4 or 5 years ago, instead of them just giving you a Mustang and then it's auctioned off at the end, you would bid on the Mustang beforehand. And then that Mustang that you won in the auction was eligible for the makeover. So they're doing something similar to that this year, only instead of bidding on the horse and it's your horse, you're really bidding on the chance to pick two horses to go. Does that make sense? So you have the option to go to the auction and bid on two horses. You can pick one of those horses to compete. The other horse is going to go through the trainer incentive program, meaning the horse has to meet the tip requirements, which are haltered, leading. You can pick up its feet, loaded in the trailer, and then the trainers can find a home through it for it, find an adopter through the tip program, and then they get some money for doing that. And then the horse that you ultimately choose to go to the makeover, you compete on that horse in the makeover. Then the horse is auctioned to the public at the end of this, and the trainer gets half the proceeds from that, half of the sale price. So very confusing rules, but long story short, I got two Mustangs.
I was going to say, but the long story short is you have two more beasts.
I have two more to add to my number. And I guess this was a bit of a game in the auditor group, is they're trying to guess how many animals I have. And I'm like, good luck, because not even I know.
We had talked about, and I mentioned this to you, Jennifer and I talked about, what are we going to do for our fall vacation? And I think we picked Texas just so we could come out and count the number of animals you have at your house and then come up with the final number.
Yes, and I don't want to be there because I don't want to know.
We're going to do a pool. That's it. We'll start a pool. And we'll just, have everybody put in $10, and whoever comes the closest wins the pool.
Oh, sweet.
Or we'll donate the pool to your feed bill, one or the other.
Oh, yeah. That'll cover like half a day, half a day's feed.
So now I know that that some of the listeners were helping you pick out your Mustang. Tell us about the ones you got.
I went through the list several times. There's videos you can watch, and I couldn't just find a standout favorite, and the auditors were really great in helping me decide. I was able to win the mare I was really going after, and I decided to go after mares because I figured everybody was going to jump on geldings. And so one mare that I got, she looks probably pregnant. She's not, I hope. But she's pretty round and she's very beautiful. And she's from Pancake, Nevada.
Really? Nevada? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why she's so round.
It's the Pancake HMA. Yes. And apparently a lot of horses from that HMA are called, they're named Pancake. So I was thinking of calling her Waffles, but so
I like that actually.
Yeah. So I got her. The
what
only
she
thing I'm
like.
Worried
now,
about.
Now, this was a colorful batch, by the way.
It was. I got two bays because that's my color. But yeah, they had some really pretty colored up horses. So I did get her. The only thing I'm worried about her is in most of the videos, they were taken at a few different pens across the country. And most of them had like a little tally, like little marks on the corrals that said this high is 14 hands, this high is 15 hands. And this one, they had a paper, but I didn't see it till after the fact. So I have no idea how tall she is. I'm worried she might only be 12 hands high. So I might be getting a pony.
You know what?
The Mustang pony.
Yeah, we'll send you some roller skates, okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the
second you could always drive.
Exactly.
If it's a pony, well, you could take up driving.
You could drive in your freestyle, but you have to ride for the preliminary classes.
Well, then you might have to hire a kid.
Yes, exactly. But, the second mare I got is about 15 hands tall, if the little marker thing is correct. And I really wanted to come home with a horse from Jackson Mountains. That's a herd management area in Nevada, because I have a good track record with them. I've won over $50,000 with Jackson Mountains horses. So I figured for luck, I should try to pull one from there. And I did. And she's very pretty. This mare actually did not get any bids in the auction. She went to the pool. And when they go to the pool, it means that the first person with $200 can take that horse. And so that's what I did. So she's pretty cool looking. I'm excited about her. So I have two horses to choose from, both bay mares. And we will see how they end up. I pick them up in about a month.
Okay.
Like May 12th.
They ship them to you? You have to have them shipped? How does that work?
They will be shipped to Decatur, Texas at National Roper Supply. And
you
can
pick
them
up.
Yes. Yeah.
So now, can I ask how much what was the average that they were going for in the auction part?
Most, they didn't go for as high, I think, because we're not actually keeping the horses. So a lot of them were, some were $300. I got my first choice for $700. And then a few horses, one or two went for, somewhere in the $1,500 range. And wow, a few went for $2,300.
Whoa.
So that's quite an entry fee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of plan on winning something.
Exactly. Purse is pretty big, but yeah.
What is the purse on this one? Is it 100?
I think it's 100 if you win the...
That's 100,000 people, not $100 like you're used to winning locally.
Bucks.
Yeah. Like we're used to winning in everything else we do in the horse world. Yeah.
Exactly. Winning ribbons.
Exactly. Well, that's one thing that the Mustang makeovers always did. They always did have pretty good prize money. And they needed that incentive to get people to do it in the beginning, and then it just stuck. So now tell us, this is a training show. So, let's take one of these. I don't care which one. It doesn't matter, really. You're probably going to do the similar thing with both. What will your first month or 2 months look like training-wise? Can you kind of give us a step-by-step of what you're going to do with these horses? And I just got back from Road to the Horse. I saw a very condensed 3-day version, right? But what are you going to do over having a couple of, having a long time? What will you do in the first month, let's say? Let's start there.
I've done it a little bit different every time. I have done the thing where, you're on them the first day. And in some cases that if you can, I think I've learned working with Mustangs to go for it. If the horse is open and ready for you to crawl on, do it, because they kind of go through a period where they are taken out of wherever corral they've been kept in. They've been hauled across the country. They're in a new ranch, so they don't have normal anymore. And so there's this kind of period where they're just looking around like, what do I do? Where do I go? And if you kind of stride up to them and you're like, it's totally normal. Let me touch you and let me ride you. They have kind of a period where they're like, okay, I'll do that. And it tends to work out and things go really well, better than waiting too long where they get a little confident and they decide, nah, I don't think I want people on me. So I have done it, in a kind of a quick manner, as far as just getting into that first ride. But, what I plan on doing with these girls, you have the option to have them put the halter on your horse in the chute before they load. I think I'm going to go ahead and do that. just so I can get to them much quicker. I'll probably still have to work them in the round pen and work on getting them to face up and follow me around a little bit. And then once I can safely get a hold of that halter lead rope, I will. And I try to get to their feet right away. So what I mean by that is I try to teach them, listen, when I pick up the halter this way, I want your feet to do this. So when I pick up the halter in this way, your feet need to do that. And get them to where I can safely lead them around in a small space, and then I'll work on bigger spaces. I'll do a lot of work with touch the first few days, you know, make sure I can touch them all over their body. I can, you know, start trying to climb on them bareback. And the way that I do that is actually pretty safe. Once I know that I can yield their hindquarters and get them to face me, then I start leaning and laying all over them. And, I do a little bit of a version of, the Jeffrey method, or it's otherwise known as the human curry comb. And I've never heard it called that before.
That's funny.
Oh, you, but yeah. Yeah. And when you're done, if your shirt's not dirty and covered with fur, you're not doing it right. you want to lean on them and slither all over them and look really weird to your neighbors and really get all over. And it looks like it could be dangerous because you're climbing all over a horse that's never been ridden before. But honestly, it's very safe if you know what you're doing. I've never, knock on wood, had any kind of accident doing it. The worst thing that ever happened to me, I was laying on a horse's back and she decided she didn't like the feeling and kicked straight up in the air. And I flew through the air, landed on my feet with the lead rope still in my hand. And so, you know, it was not too dangerous, but
which is kind of why you do that, right? Is because it's an easy exit.
It is. Yeah. And you know, the way that I plan it, so if I start with the left side, I always make sure if something happens, I drop off on the left side. Like because the lead rope is on the left side, you don't want to crawl over and then somehow manage to end up on the right side of the horse, because they've probably never seen you on that side doing that. And so there's a lot of like safety things I do. First of all, if I'm worried about the horse kicking or biting me, it means I haven't done enough prep work and I need to go back and do some groundwork. And then I'm very careful about actually straddling over the horse and sitting on them like I'm riding them. Because if they get tense, our natural reaction is to squeeze with our legs, which just makes things worse, because that kind of feeling of something wrapping around the horse's belly is typically what makes them buck. So when I start out, at least I lay across them flat. I lay on my stomach and keep my whole, it's like planking. Remember that fad? I lay across them completely flat and, you know, and I get to where I can slide off their butt. But I build up to that. And for the most part, they really, really tend to accept it. There's something about it, something about being up really close to them and kind of massaging them all over. They really chill out. And it's a good thing to do before you do that first ride.
Now, when you do the first ride, do you do it bareback or do you do it with saddle?
I have very rarely actually had a horse take steps with me on bareback. Usually I will do that curry comb thing up into the point to where I can lay all over them. I can slide off the back of them. And then I start introducing them to the saddle. And I do all the steps with the saddle. So I make sure they accept the saddle blanket. I throw the saddle on. I move them out with the saddle, walk, trot, canter, let them get the feel for it. And once I'm pretty sure they're not going to buck anymore, then I start putting a foot in the stirrup and standing up in the stirrup, laying over the saddle. I'll lay halfway over and reach over and kind of take the other stirrup and kind of lightly tap them on the belly on the other side, just so they see that movement. And then I'll just start doing all the riding part with the saddle on.
Gotcha. All right. And then, what will you do? You'll start working on the basics of groundwork when you're in the saddle?
Yeah. So I do stuff with the lead rope before I ride that is going to simulate a ride. So I drive the horse right about from their rib cage. So I place my body near the rib cage, which is going to kind of act similarly to my leg. And I teach them to follow a feel on that lead rope. So I'll have them go around me in a circle. So this isn't like lunging. This is very low energy. This is a very small circle. And I'll have them go forward and around, make sure I can get them to go forward, go around me in the correct direction. I'll practice a lot of lifting up on that lead rope. And I kind of direct that lead rope up toward the horse's withers. And when I do that, they should be able to step their hindquarters away from me. So they're going to disengage those hindquarters. And then I switch hands with the lead rope and I have them follow a feel and change directions. So with that exercise, and I do that over and over and over and over and over again. And I do that with the flag too. So as they're going around, they can get used to something that makes some noise and is a little scary and has a weird sensation to it. So that whole thing is all the things I'm going to do in my first ride. They're going to go forward. They're going to go in a small circle. They're going to learn to yield their hindquarters, which is going to be my one rein stop in case of emergencies. And by changing directions, they're also learning steering. So I just repeat those same steps from their back. I'll use my legs, or sometimes just kind of moving back and forth with my body is enough to get them to move. Or I'll just lightly take that lead rope side to side and kind of slap my jeans with it and make a little bit of commotion and have them go forward. I have them go forward a few steps. And then when I pick up on that lead rope, I'm going to be drawing it up toward their withers, just like I did on the ground. And they'll know to step their hindquarters around and then we can go the other way. So, you know, hopefully everything I do from their back is something they've had done on the ground and they're going to find it familiar and hopefully not buck me off.
Right. That's the ultimate goal. All right. Well, we'll continue with that conversation as you get these horses in. And then I think it's going to be fun to kind of follow along and you can talk about each one and how they're learning differently and what you've done differently with each one. So when you get them in, let's continue that conversation. We have some listener email or some listener questions we're going to get to here as the show goes on and a couple of guests, one of which we're going to talk to right after this word from our title sponsor at Horseware.
Another long, tough fly season is right around the corner. And the only choice for this fly season are the Amigo range of fly sheets because they're built tough and feature the latest in design comfort, bug-busting technology, and sun-protecting fabrics. And the Amigo range has a fly sheet for every budget, from the Amigo Bug Buster Vamoose with no fly zone to the Amigo Bug Rug Fly Sheet. Find Amigo fly sheets at your local or online retailer, or you can visit horseware.com. That's horseware, horseware.com.
All right, your first guest is ready. I see that Guthrie also has an Amigo fly sheet, huh?
Yes, I just bought it for him. It covers every square inch. It's got permethrin baked in, which is great because the stupid horse reacts to fly spray. And he has not had any bad reactions to the fly sheet. And he isn't scratching all of his skin off yet. So I'm very
perfect.
Happy with it.
Win,
yeah,
win, win.
And he's not, yes, and he's not torn off the fly sheet yet. And he's turned out with it. There's not one hole in it. He's had it on for about a week. So
let's knock on
something. I am thrilled.
Yes.
I know, right? Yeah.
All right, John is ready.
Okay, so we have with us today John Langmore, who is one of the producers for a new movie coming out in 2018 called The Cowboys, and it's about the men and women working on big outfit cattle ranches. How are you, John?
I'm very good. Thank you, Mary. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. I actually shared the trailer of your movie. It's a really awesome trailer that you guys can check out on thecowboymovie.com and in the auditor group. And there was a lot of interest and most of us have never dealt with, you know, been in that kind of lifestyle of working on a huge cattle ranch out in, you know, the American West, and it was something that we just found really interesting. And I was going to ask, where did you guys get the idea for this? How did this all come about that you decided to make this movie?
Yeah, good question. So my father was a photographer and did a book on the cowboy, the Big Outfit Cowboy in 1975. Then he got me a job when I was 12 years old working on some of the big ranches he had photographed. And so I spent 12 summers working on big outfits, you know, going out with a wagon and branding calves the first half of those summers, and then going to another ranch in eastern Montana and starting horses the second half of all those summers. And then I pursued a professional career and as an attorney, and, you know, kind of left my cowboy past behind me. And then I took up photography, strangely enough, many years later, and I decided to do a photo project on the working cowboy myself. So I spent the last, it's been about 5 years, photographing some of the same ranches my dad photographed, several of the same ranches I worked on. And then by chance, a filmmaker, an excellent filmmaker, a guy named Bud Force, took out an office next to me in the place where I office. And he was a former bull rider, spent his life in agriculture and went into filmmaking later in life. And he and I just, you know, came up with the idea of, wouldn't it be great to make a documentary film on the working cowboy, something he's always wanted to do. And it was kind of an extension of the photo project that I had just wrapped up. And that's how it came to be.
That's really cool. It kind of sounds like it was meant to be. So just watching the trailer, I learned a lot that I never knew. And you know, I live in Texas and I have a 30-acre ranch, but it's not quite what you're
now,
showing.
Now, John, there's 1,000 animals on the 30 acres, but we're not mentioning that.
Yeah, okay, right. Got them packed in. Yeah, exactly. So you've got as many animals as a big outfit, just not as much land, I guess.
Exactly. Less fence to fix that way.
Yeah. We're not going to brand mine, though. So, but yeah, you know, it's a lifestyle. And they mentioned this in the trailer that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there are still working cowboys. Cowboys are still a thing. It's not just something you see in fiction movies. Were there any particular myths you were trying to dispel or things that you're trying to get to people who might not be familiar with this lifestyle?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You just mentioned one of them. It's, you know, they have been lamenting the cowboy's demise since, you know, before the invention of barbed wire, really with the railroads kind of, you know, starting to end the cattle drives. People started writing about, this is the end of the drifting cowboy. You know, Will James, the famous Western author, kind of, there was always, you know, a melancholy notion running through his books that this is the end of it all. And, you know, Lonesome Dove, Monty Walsh, all those movies played off that same theme. And that is one of the things, you know, that we want to, in addition to, you know, really showing the life of these people, what does it mean to be a big outfit working cowboy? It's also to make it clear that, you know, they are absolutely alive and well. You know, it's not a growing industry because it's too hard to put together the amount of acreage today. It's, you know, too hard and too expensive to put together that much acreage with the price of land where it's at today. So big outfits aren't growing. I think that kind of stopped in the 50s. Although there is one in New Mexico, Henry Singleton put together 1 million acres since the 1980s. I think this is probably the greatest the number of big outfits will be. They won't grow from here, but so many people are out there making their money in other industries and then are committed to preserving this way of life. And so what they'll do is buy the big outfits intact when they come up for sale, like the Wagner's Ranch up around Vernon, 550,000 acres sold completely intact. So, you know, that's
how much did that sell for?
Working outfit. Thank God.
How much did that sell
for? Yeah, it was expensive because it's got oil and gas. Yeah, it's in the $700 million. So nobody is going to buy that ranch based off of selling cows and horses off of it. Believe me, you know, you will have need to have made your money through Walmart or something else and then go put it into a ranch. But again, you know, thank goodness there are a group of people that are making their money in other industries and putting it into ranching, which preserves this way of life and, you know, provides for the beef and a good group of horses for the country to ride and beef to eat. So I think it's important that that carries on.
You know, we've talked quite a bit on the shows over the years about how being a cowboy and how ranching, especially on the large acreage, is changing. Did you find doing this that there are still a lot of them using horses? Are they all going to four-wheelers and other, you know, other modes? What did you find?
Yeah, no, the only real change that I found in the way these guys work from like when I was doing it in the 70s and 80s is the intervention of the truck and trailer. That it used to be, if we had to go to the far side of the ranch, you know, we'd get up at 3:30, be saddled up before 5, and you'd trot out for 3 hours before you know, the cowboys were scattered on a circle and you started gathering the cows. And that was just the way we did it. And, you know, trotting out in the morning was my favorite part of the day. You know, you get your horse to unwind a little and you aren't behind cows. You can kind of let your mind drift a little and you're just covering country on the back of a horse. It was wonderful.
It's the ultimate trail ride, right? I mean, that's
very few.
Horse people live for that ride.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, if you think of it that way, that's right. I mean, and it has that same component, you know, but amplified by 10 or 100. So that is the biggest change I've found. None of these big outfits do things, you know, other than trailer out their horses. They don't gather cows with trucks. They don't use four-wheelers. You know, they don't use helicopters. Sometimes they'll use helicopters to go find a group of horses or cows that they just can't find a horseback. But that's it. Once they spot them, they send guys out a horseback. So, no, it is very much, I mean, you can't, you know, when you're gathering, say, 700 cows and, you know, some of them want to turn back and cows and calves get separated, you can't do that on a four-wheeler. I mean, they have not invented anything as good as a cowboy on the back of a horse to keep those cows moving. And I suspect they won't. There's nothing on the horizon that's going to displace a cowboy a horseback, you know, working these big herds of cows.
Right, well, that's good to hear, actually. It's really good to hear. Now, one of the questions that we had is, how did you decide what ranches that you were going to go to? And did you get any pushback? Did you get any pushback from the cowboys saying, oh, we don't want to be in a movie?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I had that issue with the movie. We really, at that point, I had been to 12. I went to 12 big outfits for my photo project. So we went back to all but one of them were ranches that I had been to as part of my photo project and had established, you know, relationships with the managers and the cow bosses, which are the critical people that let you on to a ranch. So it was easy for the sake of the movie. It was not as easy for the sake of my photo project. And I absolutely had ranches that didn't return my call, or that said, no, we're not interested in having a photographer out here. And the things that they think about are first and foremost, they don't want you getting any of the cowboys hurt. You know, when you're working around livestock, if you aren't familiar with, you know, as all of your listeners, you know, that ride horses would be aware, you know, you need to be familiar with sort of the vagaries of livestock and horses, and you need to know where to be and where not to be. So they don't want you getting anybody hurt. Secondly, they don't want you interfering with the work. And then lastly, they don't want you getting yourself hurt. You know, they could probably live with that, but they don't want to see it happening. So they're very, yeah, they leave your safety to your own sensibilities, you know, which is a funny thing about cowboys. But that's their kind of biggest fear, is that you don't know your way around livestock. You're going to be in the way. And I had established with them beforehand that, you know, I knew how to be around livestock, and I assured them that, you know, we wouldn't be in the way when we were filming the movie, you know, the trailer for it at this point. So, you know, there, it is not easy to get access to these big outfits, and they are, you know, it's a very tight knit group of guys. And when you show up, man, they are checking you out, you know, how you wear your hat, how your boots are, you know, and it always took about 3 days for people to warm up and let their guard down and, you know, kind of start talking. It'll be interesting to see. So we filmed, you know, about 2 days on each of these ranches to put together the teaser for the film, you know, and our intentions are once we raise the money to go back out and film, you know, on each ranch, 8 to 10 days, how the different the dynamic will be now that the teaser has been out there. Oh, and by the way, you asked, how did we pick the ranches? What we want to do is cover the kind of full spectrum of working cowboy styles, from kind of the buckaroos up in northern Nevada and that area, down through cow punchers in New Mexico, the Arizona cowboys, and, you know, Texas cow punchers as well. So it's, we want it to be national in scope, you know, largely for the differences in working styles and just to give the viewer a real sense of what the lot of the big outfit cowboy across the West really is.
Made me realize how the hats are different everywhere. That's what I was watching.
Hats the hats are very, are,
they yeah. are, no, I,
that's true. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And you can tell where a guy is from right away by looking at his hat.
Yep.
And that's something that I think is brought up in the trailer, which I find really fascinating, because I've kind of watched these types of guys from the sidelines. I'm friends with a few photographers who photograph this kind of way of life. And, you know, someone mentioned in the trailer, you know, you don't realize how discerning these guys are in taste. It's not just buy whatever hat you can find, throw it on your head and go. You know, it's all working gear, but just across the country, the difference in the tack and how the horses are trained and the kind of bits you hang in your horse's mouth. And, you know, I know with some of the buckaroos, if you have this certain knot, it means your horse can do this. And it's really cool. Just the different things that people are wearing. And yeah, you don't want to be the guy who walks in that group wearing the wrong hat, I think is what I gathered from that.
Well, here's what I've always said. You know, there are a lot of Texas guys that want to go up and ride in Nevada and vice versa. You know, Nevada buckaroos that want to go work on Texas outfits. You know, all of them are kind of bound by this desire to want to see land that they've never, you know, ride through country they've never ridden in before and see how it's done in other outfits. But when you show up outside of your home territory, you know, with a different style of bits and all that, you better be good at what you do. You know, because they will test you. First thing they'll do is they'll put some rough horses in your string. And, you know, you got to be able to kind of stick with those rough horses, because that's the first thing that they'll do. And then if you're a
good hand, it's like a fraternity. It's like hazing.
That translates.
It's like hazing.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, very much so, you know, kind of regional fraternities. But if you're good at what you do, you will have their respect right away, and that is all you need to get by anywhere, is to have the respect of the crew and, you know, the buckaroo or cow boss and the ranch managers. And then you're good as gold, no matter what your style is. And most of those guys will adapt slightly when they go to other country. Like, you wouldn't want to put a spade bit in a horse's mouth in Texas. I mean, the boss wouldn't even let you do that. The horse wouldn't carry it. You know, you could probably use a curb bit from Texas up in a you know, up in Nevada where they use different kinds of bits, but you'll make minor modifications to adjust to, you know, the way the horses are ridden and things like that. But on the whole, they kind of do things the way they do it, you know, and a big one is, do you dally when you rope or do you tie hard and fast? And, so it's, those styles are definitely different, but, and one thing I was going to say that, like, one thing that is valued absolutely, even though the style of training horses and riding horses and all that is different from north to south, being a great horseman is sort of the highest quality you can have in the cowboy world. You know, more than knowing cows, more than anything is, you know, and that goes across the entire West, is just being really good with a horse is kind of the most cherished quality you can have.
Well, now, we were contacted and we're part of a documentary that's just coming out now, actually, about podcasting. And so they came and they filmed for 3 days in our studio. And of course, they'll use about 2 minutes of it, right? And they filmed us with the horses and all of that. And it's a major documentary. And I, you know, I know the guys that did it, and, you know, it's cost them three times what they thought it would. And, you know, it's taken a whole lot longer than they thought it would. You know, you guys are kind of going to be in the same boat, right?
No, it's as you kind of I start to get tense as you describe all those issues we're right in the middle of dealing with. Yeah, and, you know, we are going through the same process of every documentary filmmaker in the world. You know, Bud and I funded the making of the teaser to kind of generate interest in the project and demonstrate, you know, what it is the end product is going to be about. Now we're in the fundraising mode, and then we'll go into the distribution mode once we, you know, raise the money and get back out and film the whole thing. So, yeah, no, it's a long process. I mean, one thing we're committed to is I think we're going to go to 6 outfits, hopefully no more than 6. It would start to get difficult, but we have those 6 picked out. We've already been to 4 of them to make the teaser. And then we're going to film through the 4 seasons. We'll probably focus in on a few key characters to kind of help convey the story. But then we'll go through these ranches through the 4 seasons. So people have a sense of, you know, what an annual cycle of working on a big outfit is like.
Well, I can tell you one of the guys you got to...
And I'm sorry, did I interrupt you?
No, one of the guys you have to highlight is the little kid with no pants. Put him first, and you'll raise all the money. Just put him first. He was so cute.
Yeah, no, everybody loves a kid on a bicycle, you know, saying that it's about ready to rain.
Yeah. It was very, very cute. Well, I know what you're going through, and I know... Where is there a fundraiser right now? Is there a GoFundMe? Is there a Kickstarter, or what's the scoop?
No, we're you know, our objective is not to, you know, I say resort to that. It's just what we want to do is just offer the film up to the viewing audiences. You know, we're hoping we can raise the money through our own contacts and, you know, maybe some supportive companies that kind of operate in the industry and just give it to the world at large instead of asking them to pay to make the thing. Now, you know, if we haven't raised the money 6 months from now, I may, you know, Bud and I might sing a different tune about that. But that's our objective at this point. And I'm confident that we'll get the money raised and we won't have to ask the public for it. And then we'll just be able to offer it to them and, you know, they'll just get to watch it.
Terrific. Well, good luck with it. Thank you so much for joining us. It's thecowboymovie.com. And we'll have you back again when it's coming a little closer to being out.
Well, it's a real pleasure to join you, Mary and Glenn, and I love your program, and I'm very happy to have been part of it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Well, there you go, Mary. Bye. He has to come by your place. He could have all different kinds of animals in the movie.
Oh, yes. I would be the comic relief.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. You don't know how bad I wanted to be like, if you need anybody on the crew, I'll hold a camera.
Yeah. I mean, you like cowboys, and there'll be a lot of those in this movie. And let me check your hat, Al. I guarantee you.
I have one of every style, so I'd be good wherever we went.
Yeah, you know your regional hats. We need to do that again sometime. You know the hat guy that you're friends with? We need to have him on talking about hats again, because we haven't done that in a long time. And it's you know, if you're not Western, if you're kind of un-English, you don't realize how big a deal that is.
It is a big deal. And the same, you know, what John was saying, if you're going to go with a very unique hat that like really stands out, it's only going to work if you're really punchy and you know what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to look like a goober.
You're going to look like me wearing my cowboy hats where I look like a faker.
Oh, no, yours is perfectly fine.
But I look like a faker. I look like a faker because I'm wearing sneakers and no boots.
A lot of rodeo cowboys now, when they're not doing that, they're wearing either loafers or sneakers, which to me is just weird. But, you know, I think my granddad wore boots for every occasion until the day he died. But
he's probably buried in them.
So sneakers aren't I think he was. I want the job of picking out cowboy hats for movie actors, because so many times now in the historical movie stuff, they usually get that pretty good. But so many times, if someone's supposed to be a cowboy in a movie, he's wearing a hat that looks like what a sorority girl would wear at a country night at the nightclub.
Yes.
It's like, no, that's not what you're supposed to wear. And it's the wrong size.
Buy it at Spencer's Gifts, right? At Spencer's Gifts. Yep.
It just takes me out of the movie. It's like, aren't there supposed to be some rhinestones on there?
Well, it looks like fun. I can't wait to see the movie. And I was so happy to hear him say that, look, they use horses. They're not using four-wheelers. You know, I was so happy to hear him say that, because, you know, obviously we want to see that tradition continue forever. By the way, million acres, the guy has bought up a million. I just can't even comprehend how big that is.
No. And, you know, I've heard of situations where, you know, kids working on the ranch actually got lost and they had to send out the helicopter to find them.
I bet. Well, it's a million acres. It's like the size of half a state.
Yes.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, let's take a break for our song for the day. We'll come back and we'll do some more training tips, answer some listener questions. Plus, we have Kitty Lauman coming on, and she's going to be talking a little bit about pole training. So we got a lot more coming up for you today. I thought a little Bren Hill Ode to Selway would be a good transition into the second half of today's show. We'll be right back.
Headwaters of the Snake, I am free, Lord, I am free. And I miss my home and family and the woman that I love, but the spirit of the Lapwai runs through the land like blood. And I'm leaving it behind me now, 'cause that's how it has to be. But I'll return and I'll be free. Blasted timber wolves, they run free, Lord, they run free. Canyon winds and rivers, clear and clean as polished gold, they run free, Lord, they run free. And the world keeps changing, spinning faster all the time, when a tired and troubled nation weighs heavy on my mind. I can leave it all behind me and be just who I want to be, and be free, Lord, and be free. Faster all the time, when a tired and troubled nation weighs heavy on my mind. I can leave it all behind me and be just who I wanna be. Be free, Lord, be free. From Spotted Bear, Montana, to Nez Perce, Idaho, I am free, Lord, I am free. Turn me loose and set me running on Elk City wagon road. Now
I'll be free, Lord, I'll be free. When you see them crystal waters, you will never be the same. You can disappear and wander in land never to be tamed. So leave your troubles far behind you, come and ride along with me, and be free, Lord, and be free, and be free, and be free.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. IceVibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the IceVibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, IceVibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. IceVibe.
You can find out more details about IceVibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com, or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about IceVibe circulation therapy from Horseware. Well, we're back, and by the way, that song was Ode to Selway. It was by Bren Hill. You can find all of his music at brenhill.com. And, you know, I didn't realize, it's been years since I played that song, but it was so appropriate after we talked about that particular movie. It was perfect.
It was the perfect song.
I know. And Bren Hill, he has so many great songs. He's a cowboy poet, and we haven't talked to him in forever. We need to get him back on. He's a really, really neat guy. Well, we have to head off to our next guest. We're going to continue training talk here with Mary. Why don't you introduce your guest?
Okay, we have a timely guest since I'm getting some wild Mustangs in about a month, and I could use all the help I can get. We have Kitty Lauman from Lauman Training out of, I believe it's Oregon. How are you, Kitty?
Very good. How are you guys?
Not doing too bad. Tripped all over what I was going to say. Not doing too bad at all. We've been kind of talking about the Wild West lifestyle, and I understand you're pretty well known for working with Mustangs, and wanted to have you on specifically. We've been talking about using a pole to gentle Mustangs, and it's something that's been of interest to a lot of our listeners, and that's something you do quite well.
Thank you. My grandfather developed it in the 1930s. He moved to Oregon from Oklahoma, and there was a lot of wild horses running on the ranches, and he wanted to find a newer, easier way to gentle the horses, so he developed that, and then I grew up as his sidekick and have been working wild horses with him since I was young and have continued to do so.
Okay, that is seriously extremely cool. and I understand, and I was trying to find a bio for you, but I could not find it. But you competed in the very first Mustang Makeover. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
Yes. In 2007, I competed and was reserve champion there.
And was that the horse that, so there's a video when I first heard about this kind of training and using the gentle Mustangs, was that the same horse you filmed? Was it Ranger?
Yes, it was Ranger.
And for those who don't know, who've never heard of using a pole to gentle horses, what does it involve? Can you give us an explanation of what that's like and why it works?
Sure. What my granddad used to always talk about, and when you work horses, you understand that it's the contact, the anticipation of touch that they're afraid of. What's it going to be? A foal will even come up and check you out, but, you know, if you move towards it, it'll jump away. So with working a wild horse, we are predators. And so we look like a predator, we act like a predator, because that's what we are. And so if we start trying to chase the Mustang, then we instill in their mind that, yes, we are a predator, and so they need to run or they're going to be eaten. And so what he did is he wanted to start scratching them, because he knows as soon as you can start rubbing on them, then they start liking it, and pretty soon they're your best friend. And so he uses the bamboo pole because it's lightweight and it has the little ribs on it from where it grows, and he would use that to start scratching them. And we would set it on their withers, right in front of the withers, actually where a mare would nuzzle her foal, and you start rubbing there. And when you first put it on, they're kind of, some get kind of startled, but you want to let them sniff it and see it first. And it smells natural. It doesn't smell scary because of being a pole. And then you start rubbing them with it, and it doesn't take them any time at all. And they're going, hey, this is okay. And so we're using it as an extension of our arm so we can create the contact, which is most feared by them, and then showing them that the contact is friendly contact. That's what they would do with their pasture mates. And then with a wild horse especially too, they're not used to things touching their back legs that are friendly or their belly. And so you can use that pole and put it all over their body, developing a relationship with them in the meantime of the fact that you're good and you're going to scratch them and love them, and at the same time keeping us very safe. And before you know it, you've worked your way up the pole until you're petting the horse with your hands.
And that's what I love about it, is it everything just, for one thing, it seems to flow right into the next step. And the videos that I've seen, I don't see a lot of any kind of wrecks, or the horse has to go through this horrible, terrible experience before it starts feeling good. You know, it just kind of seems really natural. And so when you do this with your horses, what kind of space are you working them in? Do you have them in a round pen? How high are your fences? What's the best area if you want to start doing this with your Mustang?
Okay. Well, what we use is a square pin, because if you stand exactly in the center of a square pin and the horse is in the corner, he's farther away from you. And so each corner gives them a place to stop that's further away from you. A round corral, there's no end in sight, and so they'll start running and never have a place to stop. When you work wild ones, you have to remember that some of them are going to be incredibly wild. The older that they are, the more they're going to be worried. I've literally worked and generaled hundreds of Mustangs, and there's some that just your presence is enough to send them over the fence. Others will hide in a corner and just not, you know, look at you. Others are interested. The younger they are, the more interested they are. I tell people, especially if they're not horse people in general, if they want to try a Mustang, but they, you know, don't know horses a lot, to always go for a baby, because they gentle easier. My most difficult horses have been 5 and over, even though I've trained many older horses, including gentling some that were in their teenage years. And the fences should be appropriate for the horse. So if you have an older Mustang, they may need to be a full 7 foot tall to keep them from trying to jump it. We have a building that we work them in, because it's got a roof on it, so we can work in all weather. And it's 20 by 20 feet square, or you can do a 24 by 24 feet square. And the idea with the pole is that your pole is half the length of the width of your arena. So if you're, or your square pin. So if your pin is 20 by 20, then your pole is 10 foot, 24 by 24, it's 12 foot.
And I, you know, you mentioned the square pin, and that's something I've recently discovered myself, because I needed an indoor pin because over here in Texas, where I live in Texas, it gets flooded every spring and it feels like I can't ride it, ride forever. And so I did the square pin just so I could have as much space as possible. And I have noticed working horses in that square pin as opposed to the round pin, which I normally have started horses in. At first you're thinking, oh, they can run into the corners and this is going to be so annoying and it's going to take me longer. And I really like that you're giving the horse an option. You can go to this corner and you're going to have, you know, you have places you can go if it's just too much. And I actually think that that's better than having that round pin where they just feel like they're in this endless cycle of, I can't get away, I can't get away, I can't get away. And I think sometimes giving a horse an option, especially a wild horse, like, here's a spot where you can go, and this is going to feel better than if, you know, being right up next to me. And so I think those square pins have really, really changed how I've been training horses.
Good. The other interesting thing is they will pick a corner that's their favorite, and they will continue to go back to that corner. If they get worried, they'll move and then they'll go back to that corner again. And the goal is when you start seeing them comfortable in all the corners instead of just their favorite corner.
Oh, that's interesting. And one thing that I saw in your video, I've seen a few people put videos out where they're using a pole, either they learned it from you or they heard about it and they're using the pole to channel their Mustangs. But one thing that I've seen that you do that I thought was so cool was you have actually used the pole to halter a horse. Is that right?
Yes, we can use a cotton rope and put a halter on one that we still cannot touch.
Which I haven't had the guts to try that out yet, but the way that I saw you do it in your video just looked like all this, and I kept replaying it, and I was like, how did that happen so fast? And it was just such an easy thing, you know, the horse is going around and all of a sudden it's got a halter on, which I think it's amazing. I think any kind of training where you can make it just flow like that is really good.
The thing with putting a halter on is you'll get some horses which do what I call the ostrich effect. They want to hide in the corner. And they also can start learning to leave anytime they want to. And within reason, that's okay. But as they get more gentle, they start using it as an escape goat or an excuse. And so by working them to where you have to make sure that you can get pretty close and you can put the pole all over them so you can take the rope off if you can't end up getting close enough to them. But after I've worked with them for a couple days or a few hours, depending on what I'm doing, whether it's a clinic situation or here at home, is we use the rope also on the bamboo pole to sack them out with. So then they become used to the rope, because a rope does not carry a rhythm, and horses understand a rhythm. So it's just like if everybody's grazing in the field and everybody's okay, all the horses are comfortable, but one horse jerks his head up and looks at something, he broke the rhythm, and then pretty soon all the horses are looking, and that's where they get nervous. And so when you use the bamboo pole, you can use it in a rhythm, and some people have labeled it the fiddler's technique, and it's that motion. You just keep a steady, easy to predict motion going, and the horse is relaxed to it. The rope doesn't carry that. So it's kind of one more step up from the rhythm to something that doesn't carry rhythm, but you're using it with the pole that still carries rhythm. And so it just, you know, it's that stepping stone that the horses can relax to it. Then you can take the rope and we put it around their neck to start with. And we do what we call as part of our rope treatment. We zigzag the rope around their body. And it's just another way to touch all the places on your horse and show them that you're not going to hurt them. And you can start putting pressure just around their neck and getting them to turn to you a little, then release the pressure. And once you have that, you'll have those few horses that just don't want you to touch them. You know, they know that the pole's okay, But when you get just so close, they just can't deal with it. And so I found by putting that halter on, when they go to leave, you put pressure on it. And so your pressure is your reprimand. And they say, oh, I can't leave. And then they look at you, you loosen. It doesn't take them any time at all, because horses are very smart to figure out that if they stay looking at you, that you don't pull on them. Or if they don't walk away, you don't pull on them. And so putting that rope halter on, if you can move your pole everywhere and rub their face and their jaw, then putting that rope halter on is still tricky. It still takes a little bit of practice, but it's very easy to do. And we also, when my husband and I first got together, he was helping me with the horses, and he was gentling one, and we had to laugh, because by the time he finally got the halter on, he just put it on with his hands, because the halter became his importance. That was what he was focusing on. And so he wasn't worrying about the horse. And so the horse knew he wasn't the priority. And pretty soon he's just up there at the horse's face, putting the rope on it. And we laughed and said, you know, even though he didn't get it on the way we had planned, because he was just messing with it and playing with the horse and not, you know, getting after him, not chasing him, any of that, pretty soon he's just up there, you know, putting the halter on without any big deal. And the horse was even more relaxed.
Wow. And that's, you know, that's so typical of the experience of working with Mustangs. I got my first Mustangs after I'd been starting colts for a few years. So, of course, I thought I was pretty handy and I knew just about all there was to know. And I did not realize how much the whole prey animal and that flight or fight response is augmented when working with the Mustang. Not only how sensitive they are to pressure, but how brilliant they are at finding holes. My Mustangs seem to know where my weak points are, and they knew that when I stepped to this part of their body, I was vulnerable enough for them to either get away or do something defensive to get me away. And it seemed like the more singular my vision of I'm going to try to get my hands on you, the more they were so good at evading it. And it, you know, it really teaches you to just, you know, make a game out of it. You know, you're not playing games, but you're just, you know, hey, I've got this halter here and you happen to be standing next to me. And it's amazing how they let down when you don't get quite, you know, we tend to revert to that predator mode of I have to get you, I have to get you. And it's amazing how much they sense that. And I find that pretty cool and very reflective of my own experience with Mustangs of how good they are at finding spots where they can get away. So once you've got the halter on, what's your next step with horses? I know that you're probably not always starting them with like a deadline in mind, or, you know, we've got to go to this makeover in 4 months and we've got to win the competition. So when you're just starting a wild horse, where do you go next? You've got a halter on, you can touch it with the pole, you can probably touch it with your hands. What's your next step?
Well, the next step is, of course, teaching them to start to lead. And when I was younger, we would just work on, you know, pull them to the right, they'd take a step, you'd love on them. Pull them to the left, they'd take a step, you'd love on them. And it'd take you about a half an hour, but pretty soon they were starting to finally move a little bit. And that still definitely works well, but Mustangs in general don't see a real reason to move. It's honestly much easier to start a domestic horse than a Mustang. A Mustang will make you work and work very hard. And as you were saying, coming out with an agenda, they are individuals, and you come out with saying, well, my plan will be to put a pole on the horse, and then we're going to go from there. And sometimes you come out and the horse just seeing you is scary enough that that's your lesson for the day. You just hung out at the fence. Other times you put the pole on them and they're good to go and they don't really seem to care at all, then maybe I'll go directly to the rope. So each day, just kind of see what that horse tells you he's ready for, and don't come out with an agenda. But once I have them to where my rope's on them, I can pet their face, then I step right into basically desensitizing. When they're wild and scared is when you can teach them in a controlled environment how to handle pressure, because the Mustangs are going to have pressure everywhere because they're not used to cars. They're not used to kids. They're not used to dogs. They're not used to anything that's at your place. And they're definitely not used to saddle horses. So the next thing I do, and it's got to be done right and quiet, it's not a crazy thing, is I go to using a flag and I keep it low and quiet, but it's a flag on a stick. We just worked them with a stick. And so I start to move the flag and they get worried and they move and I tell them they're good and they'll almost always stop to look at the flag and I stop the flag. Just like when we started working them with the pole, if they would look at me, I'd stop moving the pole and talk to them. So we're getting them to understand when things are scary, look to me. We started it with the pole. When they got worried about the pole and looked at me, I'd stop and I'd talk to them. So then I work the flag a little bit. They get worried. They start to walk. This is what we want them to do, is to move forward. But they need to move forward without bolting, without spinning, without panicking. They move and they turn their bottom away from you, quit pulling on the rope, and the flag just stays quiet on the ground. And again, this may be the third or fourth or tenth day I've worked them, depending on what the horse has said they're ready for. If they're incredibly flighty, you can just pick your arm up and down and get the same movement. So you've got to read the horse and what they need. But by moving them like this, you're teaching them when something happens that's scary, don't run away. Just move around. I like to have all 4 feet moving around me. I don't just want the bottom to move like a disengaging, because when I ride this horse, I want his whole body engaged. And so what I want to see is almost a little bit of a sideways motion around me with all 4 feet tracking. And then they're learning to get off that rope, which is going to help us for lunging. It's going to help us if we go lead our horse somewhere and he spooks at something. He's going to jump forward, feel that rope, and immediately turn around and look at me so that he's not going to drag me anywhere. He's getting used to seeing me on both sides making motions. Before long, I'm taking the flag and I'm rubbing it all over his body. So it's the same thing as the bamboo pole was. It's touching him. It's down his legs, his belly. And then, he's learning not to panic from the motion. And then now I'm also closer to do this. And so during this, I'll stop, pet him with the flag. I'll pet him with my hands. So it doesn't take very long at all. And I can touch his whole body now with my hands as well as this scary flag. And then when I start leading him, I can use my flag on the outside as pressure from behind. So he goes forward instead of pulling on his head. And, you know, a horse's natural reaction, especially a Mustang, if a cougar were to jump on his head, he's going to go backwards. He's going to rear. He's going to strike at his head. He's going to flip himself over backwards, trying to kill the cougar on his head. So when we put a halter on and just start playing tug of war, we create this natural bred instinct in them and they'll fight. But if we instead press from the rear, like using our flag at their hips, then it's like if a cougar jumped on his hips, he's going to go forward. He might kick, which is not being malicious at you. It's strictly a leave me alone, go away. But when you don't get mad at him for kicking at you, it's just part of his learning process. Pretty soon he quits because he knows that the kicking doesn't work, but the moving away quietly does.
And I think that's that concept of not wanting the horse to just plant his front end in the ground and disengage, or even wanting the horse to just stand completely still. I think that's a hole in a lot of the programs I've seen in, you know, the very popular natural horsemanship movement. And it's how I started out, is you wanted the horse to be perfectly still while you flapped all sorts of things around him. And I learned that there was a big hole there because, one, I'm never going to get the horse to stand still to everything that's going to come up at him in his life. We might be moving down the trail and a deer jumps in front of us or out from behind us. And, you can get a horse to stand still and accept a lot of things, but once their feet are moving, it's a whole different ball game. And so I've actually found myself very rarely asking the horse to stand completely perfectly quietly while I move things around you. I'd rather teach him, okay, sometimes your feet are going to be moving. In fact, most of the time, 99.9% of the time when I'm on you and something scares you, we're already moving. And so instead of running away, or if you feel like you're trapped, instead of bucking me off and then running away, move in a way where you're following a feel. And I think you stated it perfectly, how they're kind of moving around. They're sort of walking a united circle where their front end and their back end is doing about the same amount of work. They've got their rib cage lifted up. I think that would keep a lot more people safe. To me, a horse that I cannot get to move out of its tracks because it's been so desensitized to everything is a scary horse that I actually don't want to get on. So I really appreciate you pointing that out.
Well, thanks. And what I've also found is what you're saying is very, very true, is a Mustang especially, one, to tell them they can't move means they're going to be eaten. And so allowing them to move, but allowing them to move in a controlled manner will keep them and us safer. Plus, we allow them to stop instead of make them stop. Pretty soon they're relaxed stopping and they're relaxed moving. So now you have both things. If they only will move, you still have a hole, you know, if you're sacking them out. And if they'll only stand, you still have a hole. They have to do both. So that's exactly what you're saying.
So if someone wants to try this for the first time, actually starting, from square one with the pole, is there any signs that, are going to tell you maybe you're doing it wrong, you should back off or do something differently?
Well, it's one of the easier techniques. I do have a video out called From Wild to Willing, and everybody that has purchased it has really enjoyed it. We really tried to make it step by step. We actually took a broke horse and tried to show, you know, this is where you want to start and why, and, you know, tried to really put it together in an easy to understand format. And the biggest thing is time and patience. You cannot rush the gentling process. You can't, it's kind of like telling your kid he's going to read today. He only learned what an A was today, but he's going to read the darn sentence today. It's not going to happen. And so we have to remember that with our horses, just like our kids. Some kids are reading before they enter kindergarten. Other kids struggle all the way through all their schooling just to do the simple reading. Horses are going to be the same. Some will come around very quickly and some will struggle. In the video, we work three different horses. One of them was older and very, very wild and pretty crashy. And so I didn't get near as far with him, and he would have been an incredibly hard horse for anybody to do. The other two were pretty decent and pretty easy. They were younger. They were 2 and 3. And then if people will be slow and look for the signs, and we try to show that through the video, but look for that horse looking at you. You know, you need to notice this. When the horse looks at you, he's asking a question. His question is, what are you? Who are you? And are you going to eat me? So if you ignore him and just keep doing your thing, then you are not answering his question. When you stop and acknowledge him and everything gets quieter when he looks at you, then he starts going, oh, are you the answer? Are you what makes things easier? And I found most people that do the pole, if they're having problems, it's because they're pushing too fast and aren't giving the horse the time to relax and absorb the lesson. If you just run it over his back and leave, he has no clue what happened. But if you put it on him and he looks at you and you talk to him, and then as he seems like he's relaxing, you take the pole off, back away, hang out for a few minutes, step back forward, put it on again. You know, it's all this time, it gives him a chance to absorb what's happening and the fact that you haven't eaten him and you're not chasing him like a predator. And so pretty soon he starts thinking you're pretty good. And if it's a young horse, there's a good chance that if it's a weanling to yearling, they could literally start coming right up your pole and start sniffing you to figure out who you are.
And I think that's a really good piece of advice. And it's, you know, people might think the magic is all in the pole, but, you know, it's really the pole is the tool. It's the person who's using the pole who's going to be making everything happen. So if people are interested in your video, they want to learn more about you, where can they find you online?
Okay, well, I have a new website I'm working on. It's called LamanTrainingLessons.com. And Laman is spelled L-A-U-M-A-N. And it's an interactive website. I was working on the idea of being able to work horses with different issues and use, you know, show the real-time footage on them. And then people could ask questions. And then I could show in real time on these videos. And that had been the idea. But I'm not a computer person, and the person that was helping me hasn't been able to do as much. And so the videos are there, and there's a whole lot of daily videos. And I'm hoping now that the snow has left from Oregon that I can start doing some more daily videos and stuff. So if they go to LamanTrainingLessons.com and then they can sign up to see videos, or you can go, there's a mercantile page, or I was trying to remember what it was called, but a place to purchase, and you can see that. And if they can't find it, or if their browser is not bringing it up, they could always email me at lamantraining@gmail.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I know I'm going to be checking out the website because I've got my own two wild ponies coming in about a month. And I look forward to checking out your videos.
Well, that sounds like fun. I wish you luck with your wild ones. They're a lot of fun because they're very rewarding when you are able to get them to come around to you.
Thanks, Kitty.
For sure.
All right, we're about wrapping up the show here, and that was an interesting conversation. What a fascinating woman, huh?
Oh, yeah. I really, you know, I've followed her website and stuff since I got my first Mustang makeover horse. I've never had the guts to actually try the pole thing, but I actually think that's going to be the way I do it this time. I'm really psyched.
All right, give it a shot. Yeah. That's terrific. If you want to hear a little different spin on it, on that same conversation Helena and I had on, it'll come out tomorrow. On the Stable Scoop show, we had Anna Twinney on who uses the similar method. And, you know, it was interesting. I was kind of comparing the two when you were talking. And it was interesting to hear the comparisons and to hear it explained in a little different way. So if you're really interested in that, it would pay for you to head over there and listen to that too. Well, Mary, we run out of time already. So the show's over.
Oh, darn it.
No, we didn't even get to any listener questions today.
I know. We had good guests today.
Yeah, we did. We had good guests, and I really wanted to hear how you were going to start the Mustangs when they came in and all about them. So we'll hear more about them as the months go along. Thank you so much for joining us again. Where can people find you and your work? Tell everybody real quick about your store.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I have to update my store. But we make a lot of cool stuff on our laser engraver and our CNC router, a lot of wood products and leather products. I'm going to be coming out with some tack.
With really good sayings.
Yes, really fun sayings. There's a flask that actually one of our auditors is going to be taking to Rolex called, it's a flask, and then it's got a skull and crossbones on it, and it's engraved with blood of my enemies.
one of our auditors, let me guess, Jerry.
No.
It's not Jerry?
No, I know, right?
I thought it'd be Jerry.
Yes.
Now I'm going to have to look to see who has that.
I know, right? You're going to have to keep your eyes out.
Are you coming up? You keep promising you're going to come up to Rolex.
When is Rolex again?
Rolex, we are leaving. We'll be getting there on the 26th. Two weeks.
I feel like I'm somewhere. I want to say that I'm in Arizona at that time.
Well, we have a place to put you if you decide to come up, okay?
Ooh, I'll check it out for sure.
All right. You let me know. You keep promising you're going to come see Rolex for the first time.
I know. I'm excited if I can make it.
All right, good. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much, everybody. You can find information on the guests, and Jennifer will put a link to the trailer for the movie and everything that we were talking about. The little kid with no pants, that was so cute. All of that will be at horsesinthemorning.com. And also, our simplest and easiest way to listen to all of our shows, all 13 of them, is to go to Horses in the Morning on our app, and that's iOS or Android. Just search for Horse Radio Network. Horses in the Morning is one of the 13 shows. You can also listen to the live version of this show on the app right there on your phone. That's it for today. MaryKitzmiller.com is the other place you need to visit. See you, Mary.
See ya.
Oh, wait a minute. I guess I need to play the closing music, huh? Can you sing the closing music for us, Mary?
No, you don't want to hear me sing that.
See you tomorrow, everybody. Really Bad Ads Day. It's Friday. Send your ads into Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com.